Hi, folks. This is Talking Honor, the Pro Wrestling Torch podcast dedicated to Ring of Honor. This week on the show, tag titles were on the line. The television title was on the line in Jeff Cobb's in-ring debut and the final ROH appearance for Punishment Martinez. My name is Harley R. Padgett. I cover Ring of Honor for the Pro Wrestling Torch, written reports on weekly TV and live events, and I also contribute to the VIP podcast covering the Mae Young Classic this year, which will be wrapping up in the next week or two. I'm joined this week, same as always, Emily Fear.
Hi. What if I just don't show up one week? And you're like, I'm joined by Emily Fear, as always. And then it's not as always. I'm actually not there.
Then I would continue to do a one-sided conversation. So I'd still like leave pauses as if you were here. And it'd just be really painful to listen to.
I think maybe you could you should try doing an entire episode where you are both of us.
Split personality episode.
Yes. I think that would be a great twist. Maybe after Final Battle.
Yes, the Devil's Advocate episode where I'm like, this segment was long, it was boring, but on the other hand...
Exactly.
I thought it was paced well, and...
Oh my gosh, yeah, you could totally both sides the whole thing.
One of my characters should be a Jim Cornette-esque character, though, who just hates on any match where the guys leave their feet, and... This was stupid, what's the point of this, and...
I think we should actually just have an episode of this where we both just take on Jim Cornette's viewpoints and we'll analyze current day ROH by his perspective.
The special episode of Talking Honor hosted by Statler and Waldorf. Where just everything is like, that was terrible. That was the worst thing I've ever seen.
What's happening to wrestling? I'm down. Let's do that.
Well, we've got an hour of ROH television to dive into, as usual. But, I don't know, a little bit of breaking news. Last night, NWA held a big old pay-per-view. Their first in a long time. I want to say the first in the year of Billy Corgan, I think. Mm. They've been hosting events here and there and stuff, but I think this is their first big pay-per-view. And they reintroduced the women's title, which is currently held by Jazz. She defended against Bad Girl Penelope Ford. They reintroduced a new, the NWA national title, which was vacant and is now in possession of Willie Mack, also known as The Mack in Lucha Underground.
Cool.
And in the main event, Nick Aldis regained the NWA 10 pounds of gold from Cody.
Wow.
So I don't know. Are you surprised by that?
I guess I'm a little surprised that it went back to Aldis so quickly. I had a feeling it was going to get back there before the end of the year, but this still seems a little early to me. Cody just won it on September 1st, so for him to lose it on October 21st really does feel like a very pretty short title reign. He's only done the one defense of it?
Yeah, I think he defended against the Mac at the ROH TV tapings, and that might have been it.
Yeah, so I am a little surprised. What about you?
Honestly, when we were going into All In, I half thought maybe Cody wins it, but Aldis wins it back right away sort of thing. That was kind of my mindset at the time. Cody will win it. It'll get some attention. It'll be a feel-good moment for the pay-per-view. He'll go down in the history books as the only father-son duo to win the title. But then it'll go back to Aldis because Aldis is he's the face of NWA right now, and Cody's got other stuff going on. He's got New Japan commitments and ROH commitments, and he doesn't have time for three different promotions, does he?
I guess, yeah. I mean, those are all really good points. I guess the only thing is, if you've been watching the 10 Pounds of Gold series at all, after he won the belt, there seemed to be such a story that they were building behind that, this was kind of part of the new chapter of Cody's, independence, where, the NWA belt was something he was going to, defend anywhere that he traveled to, and he'd be willing to defend it on, any continent and any place. So I'm a little surprised that storyline didn't carry through, because ultimately he, only got to successfully defend it once, and now it's back in Aldis's hand, and I felt like the narrative was built around this idea that the NWA, that the title belt was part of Cody's big move towards even further independence.
Yeah, so I mean, if you want to read into this, more fuel on the speculation that some of the guys are going to WWE in January or something, right? Like more possibilities as to, oh, well, that's why he dropped the title. That's why they're freeing him up, so that, because he can't stick around in NWA for much longer.
I mean, who even knows? I mean, you and I both saw the gossip late last week about a potential like new promotion co-founded, set up by Chris Jericho and Jim Ross.
Yeah, I don't even know where, I can't remember where this originally came from. Somebody broke the story, and it's a lot of unsubstantiated rumors at this point. A lot of speculation that there next year there might be some sort of new promotion starting from ground zero, and Chris Jericho will be involved. So will Jim Ross and the Young Bucks and Cody and Adam Page and maybe some other people, because the guy who manages Jericho and Jim Ross also manages Goldberg and other people. You know, the idea of, and I think a lot of people right away are like, oh, there's going to be like a new, like, all-in promotion, basically.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a lot of speculation at this point. Nothing has been confirmed. People asked Jericho about it on Twitter, and he, like, laughed it off and was like, yeah, never going to happen.
Yeah. There's, and every version of the story I see tells slightly different, like, gives slightly different information, or, like, there's, you know, a bit of information in one that is not echoed in another, but there's another, like, bit of, like, gossip or tidbit in another article that isn't echoed in anything else. And it really is a lot of, like, a lot of hearsay kind of dressed in a lot of things that, like, feel kind of, like, potentially obvious if they were to happen, especially with Chris Jericho, so...
Yeah, and the name that it's all stemming from is, it's like the son of a guy who owns, I don't know your sports teams, the Jaguars, is that football?
Yes.
Okay, the guy who owns that team is like his son, who also presumably pretty rich. I mean, they own sports teams.
Yeah.
And and the son's a huge pro wrestling fan, so that's kind of, he'd be the one who'd be funding this new promotion if it were to happen. A lot of speculation, and also a lot of, I don't know. It, on the one hand, yeah, it seems like a logical extension of All In. On the other hand, I don't know. Like, I don't know if I... Can you see Cody and the Bucks, like, turning around and deciding, yeah, like, hey, it's been fun being with ROH, but now we're going to start something to directly compete against them?
I don't know that it's as black and white as that. I think it becomes this situation where they would kind of, I don't know, because ultimately we're debating about something that doesn't exist yet. But I think the idea is to increase their independence while still maximizing their exposure as much as they possibly want to. So if joining up with a promotion that is just kind of getting rolling allows them to continue working with ROH, continue working with New Japan potentially, or anywhere else they want to work, I think exclusivity is the enemy here, not necessarily like newness or like untestedness, because they're feeling pretty confident about their draw right now. And as they should, because All In really kind of proved it. So, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know why I was thinking of it as competition, because all signs point to them wanting to continue. Cody, especially from what I've seen on his Twitter and stuff, is all about like unionizing wrestling and bringing people together and making things. When he was talking about the defending the NWA title, he's like, I would love for, or the national title. He was saying he'd love for one of those titles to be, you know, this is the title that you defend in ROH and TNA and on Monday Night Raw and all these different places and stuff. So, I guess if there was any logic to this rumor, if there was any truth to these rumors and this were to happen, it wouldn't be competition of ROH. It would be another show, another channel to cross promote and bring everybody together and everybody to work with each other. Everybody except for WWE, because they don't want to work with anybody else.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately I think that, if Cody's like Twitter comments are to be followed and believed, one of the desires here is to start a promotion or start a company that is like wrestler driven, wrestler owned. Because unionizing the entire wrestling industry would be incredibly beneficial to the wrestling workforce, but probably a little untenable in its current monopolized format, given how much of a monopoly WWE holds over professional wrestling. That being said, a wrestler owned promotion, a wrestler run like cooperative promotion makes total sense and definitely fits within that vision that Cody kind of, you know, tweeted about last week.
Yeah, so we'll definitely continue to talk about this. If anything else arises over the next weeks and months and years, if there's any truth to this or if there's any definitive, this is not happening. We'll be sure to discuss that, I'm sure.
Most definitely.
This week on ROH Television, our main event was the one non-title match on the show.
Yeah, very, very... Well, I mean, I guess that that was set up. Like, you know, there's a reason that it became our main event.
That was the one thing. I did like that they explained first off that coast-to-coast match was supposed to be later. They insisted to be earlier. So that's like one bit of explanation for it.
Yeah.
And in looking at it from, you know, a non-kayfabe point of view, you don't want a 1.5-minute squash to be the main event. And it probably feels a bit safer to put Skrull and Sabin in the main event in terms of like viewership and whatever, rather than coast to coast, which is still rather untested.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. But giving it that like that narrative reasoning that, you know, coast to coast just wants to jump in there, serve coast to coast pretty well as far as like adding momentum and heading into their match with the Briscoes, but also allows us to have this, you know, Skrull Sabin match at the very end.
Yeah, so it was the villain, Marty Skrull, versus Constellation, Chris Sabin.
I feel like he's getting different names each time.
Different nicknames each time?
Yes, because he was the warrior poet at Death Before Dishonor.
You can be both, right?
Oh, you could. I mean, you're Chris Sabin. You could be anything you want to be. He's
Shane Taylor is big money Shane Taylor.
Yeah. One punch Shane.
He had a third one in there that episode too.
Yes.
Which Cabana called him on.
I mean, remember that Chris Sabin is omnipresent and intergalactic, so like he can be everything and all things at once.
All right. I think we should establish now, if you are a regular listener already, if you're gonna be a regular listener for the next couple of weeks, months, whatever going forward, Emily and I think have very differing feelings towards Chris Sabin. Just making that clear.
Yeah.
In case you can't tell.
Yeah. So if it's not already clear, I am right and think that Chris Sabin is great. And Harley is kind of wrong and doesn't find Chris Sabin as great.
He's okay. I mean, Motor City Machine Guns, I was just drawn more to Alex Shelley. Just something about his look. He's the one I pay attention to, mm-hmm. not Sabin. I don't watch New Japan, so I haven't seen Sabin's like breakout singles performances this year that you did. That's obviously a big factor. I haven't seen too much of him as a singles wrestler in ROH yet.
Yeah.
And his gimmick here, which just like that we've been seeing lately with his promos and with his nicknames and stuff, it's just like everything about him screams 14-year-old boy. And I think that's maybe a different point too, because for me, it's like, I remember being a 14-year-old boy. I don't want to go back there. You didn't have that experience.
No, but I was a 14-year-old girl who had to deal with 14-year-old boys. And like, the thing is, maybe he does remind me of a 14-year-old boy, but like, he kind of reminds me of like the 14-year-old boys that I was friends with. And I don't know. I think there's like some kind of fun, like, I don't know. There's some fun wit there. It doesn't feel like he's taking himself too seriously, which is kind of nice, because a lot of guys who are coming out of a tag team who need to establish themselves as singles wrestlers might be tempted to play it like ultra serious and like play really tough and play really like, you know, take a really sharp, like very stoic or very severe gimmick. And I like that he's kind of going in a different direction with it. I like that he's kind of entering his singles career with kind of a lighter touch. And, you know, I don't mind that so much, especially, I mean, in ROH definitely, but also like, I like the bit of levity in New Japan, which can be, you know, filled with like big personalities who are very like tough and, you know, full of fighting spirit. And I like that Chris Sabin is a excellent wrestler who also doesn't seem to take his persona too seriously.
Yeah, I don't hate it by any means. So don't get that impression. It's not like it's not like TK and Vinny or something to me. But it's just kind of there, and I don't really think much of him one way or another.
Hey, if you're a fan of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, which you obviously are if you're listening to this right now, check out Solomonster Sounds Off. It's a weekly show covering all the latest news in the world of wrestling, from WWE to Lucha Underground, New Japan, and everything in between, plus listener Q&A, rankings, and more. Check it out in iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or download directly from thesolomonster.com.
Well, I'm amused by it all, and I do have to ask you, as presented, so Chris Sabin informed us that, you know, in non-PC terms, because he did use the word spirit animal, and, you know, we don't want to use that term. It is cultural appropriation. It does not belong to us white folks. So I will say guiding animal hybrid. His is a Liger Driegel, which is a combination of a lion, a tiger, a dragon, and an eagle, which makes a lot of sense. Good thing that he has the tiger in there, because as we, you know, remember with Death Before Dishonor, he has the eye of the tiger, but for both of his eyes. So my question to you, Harley, is what is your guiding animal hybrid?
Ooh, yeah, it has to be a hybrid.
Yeah. Oh, it's gonna be a hybrid.
Yeah. Okay. So my favorite animal is the otter. Because they're basically just like cats that like to swim.
Yeah.
And then the whole thing with them holding hands while they sleep so that they don't drift away from each other in the river is just peak adorableness.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that would be half. And then for the most part, I'm a giraffe. Like, I have the build of a giraffe. Yeah. I'm tall. I'm very thin. I'm vegetarian. I just like to hang out and just like not bug anybody. Not, you know, very quiet. So, yeah, some sort of grotter.
Yeah, gerotter.
Otraff.
Yes, I would say like a gerotter or an otraff.
Sure, that's in Pokemon terms.
Yes. So it's funny that you mentioned otter, because otter does factor into mine as well. Like Mr. Sabin, I also combine four animals. So I am a bear, cat, otter, monk. Which is a bear, a cat, but also there is the bear cat. So you kind of get a third one in there for free. Otter as well. And chipmunk, because I'm kind of small. I scurry around a lot. And I have kind of like fuller, like roundish cheeks, like a chipmunk. So bear, cat, otter, monk.
Somebody had a song about a bear cat. Who was that?
I'm not sure. I think there was
I want to say it's Warren Zevon, but I don't think so.
Hmm. He had a werewolf song.
Oh, David Wilcox?
I'm not familiar.
Let me see. Canadian rock musician? Yeah. There you go. maybe it's a niche thing. If any Canadians are listening to this, let me know if that's where your mind went to first.
I don't know about your Canadian pop culture.
I don't think anybody knows David Wilcox. That came out of the dark recesses of my brain.
That name kind of sounds familiar to me. I feel like there's a song that he has that's like bigger than the Bearcat song.
Well, time will tell.
Yes.
So there was actually a match here in amongst all our all our talking around it. Skrull and Sabin did have a match. I don't have too much to say about it. I mean, Skrull went clean. That was kind of interesting, I thought.
Yeah. Yeah.
He doesn't do that often.
Not always. Yeah, no, it was a clean match. I think they're very well matched. If anyone had watched their, they did have a match at the Best of Super Juniors in New Japan this past May. This reminded me a lot of that match, because they're very mirrored in their skills. Chris Sabin can be excellent with technical wrestling, as obviously Marty Skrull can be. So like, there's a lot of like well-matched compliments in this match. And then we got our, you know, within what, like 10, 11 minutes, we got our finish. That gorgeous suplex into the chicken wing is maybe one of my favorite moves that Marty's doing. Like, he does the chicken wing a lot, and, you know, he has his presentational way of getting into it. But I just love the suplex into it. I just think that looks so good.
Yeah, it's good too, because he also does the Ghostbuster, mm-hmm. and it's the same setup. I like that. I like that you think he's going for one, and his opponent might as well, right? His opponent might think, oh, he's going for the how do you describe the Ghostbuster? Is a suplex into like a neck breaker?
No,
not a neck breaker.
Not a neck breaker.
Like a shoulder breaker?
Yeah, something like, yeah. Something
I'm bad like with that. The actual terms, but yeah. You know, the point. Like, his opponent might think he's going for like that move, but then he all of a sudden spins him around and drops him into the chicken wing instead.
Yeah.
And it's much more effective than when you yell chicken wing and then try to go for the move and your opponent hears you yell it and has a chance to counter.
Yeah, while I appreciate the kind of cheekiness of that, and like it has worked in the past as like, you know, if your opponent is so like worn out or already beat down to the point where you can get them into that chicken wing with that extra beat and like that presentation, that's fine. And Marty has definitely sold that well, but I like that he's getting beyond that a little bit. He's getting a little bit more sophisticated when it comes to putting his opponents into those moves, and that the chicken wing isn't the finisher. I like that we didn't see like Chris Sabin tap out here, which I think is good, because this match was a needed win for Marty, definitely. And we definitely need to see a win for Sabin coming up, because it's been a couple of like kind of notable losses after having received a fairly good push and his run up to challenging for the TV title. So, but I think that the clean win helps establish Marty in a direction of, you know, having a strong win rather than a cheetah win, like maybe say the matches with Hurricane Helms.
Yeah, I'm wondering are we going to see Sabin for the next little while? Because isn't he he's in the Best of Super Juniors tournament now in New Japan, right?
Yeah, so he won't be.
Is that a single elimination tournament or
no,
round robin?
It's a round robin. So he'll be there. Power Struggle, the like culminating event, is November 3rd. I don't want to say it's definite, but given that him and Kushida only have one win at this point, I think that they probably don't have, they probably won't be in the finals, the final match for that tournament. But that's not to say that he won't appear in Power Struggle, which I'm really, on a personal level, hoping he's not at Power Struggle on November 3rd, because that is also the day of the TV taping for ROH in Pittsburgh, which I am going to, and it would be a shame if Sabin was not there. So for TV's sake, that's probably the next we would see him.
Yeah, he has been announced for the Global Wars Tour.
He has, yeah.
Him and Kushida teaming together a couple times.
And that's right after the TV taping, so I don't know if they'll be over.
Yeah, it's like the 7th and the 8th of November.
It would be really fantastic if they were both just coming over on November 3rd, but I'm guessing that probably won't happen, especially since Kushida is the current IWGP Junior Heavyweight Champion, so he will likely have to be at Power Struggle, even if Chris Sabin is not.
Well, a couple weeks ago, or maybe last week it was, we were talking about Marty on the show, Marty Scurll. And wondering why he seems to be being left out of these end-of-year contract conversations, right? There's been a lot of discussion about, well, the Bucks and Cody and Paige and maybe Kenny are kind of going somewhere together or staying somewhere together or whatever they do, it's going to be as a unit. And Marty keeps being left out of this. And now it's become a running joke on Being the Elite, where he's planning this big New Year's party and nobody can commit because nobody knows whether or not what they're doing then. So, I was wondering at the time, like, why isn't he being included in this conversation with everybody else? Listener Paul Inert has the answer for us. He says, supposedly the reason Marty's name isn't mentioned with the other Bullet Club members in terms of leaving ROH in January is that his contract expires in April.
Yeah.
The others all expire in December or January, and poor Marty is left alone.
Aww.
As for him getting back into the title picture, there's an easy way for them to do it. Have him win Jericho's Sea of Honor tournament. Winner does get a future ROH title match. Only Taven, King, and possibly Castle, if he's healthy, strike me as someone who could win it right now. Quick note on that, Emily. When we did run through the Sea of Honor tournament brackets on this podcast, I ran through them for you.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
There's been a change since then.
What?
Which I didn't realize until I was looking up Paul's email. The first match in the first round was originally Jay Lethal versus BJ Whitmer. That's been scratched. It's now Dalton Castle versus Matt Taven.
Oh, geez. Is Jay Lethal in it at all?
No. I'd spoken about that at the time. I remember saying on the podcast, well, how can you have the world champion in the tournament and not have him win? He has to win, right? Well, now he's not in it.
Huh. Well, there. you were putting forth a prophecy and you didn't even realize.
But yeah, so Matt Taven versus Dalton Castle. That's like, that is not a first round match, first off. That's like a pay-per-view main event.
Yeah.
But Dalton Castle back in action, supposedly.
Yeah. No, I mean.
Returning from injury to fight on a ship.
From what I know, there is talk that he has already come back, that he has been at a TV taping.
Oh, see, I try not to follow spoilers.
I don't have
so much gets spoiled for me anyway.
Yeah, I don't have any definitive comment on this. It's just like chatter I have seen.
All right.
Well, I don't know if he fights or if he disappears. I don't know.
Okay. But yeah, that's good to know that the Peacock is back in action.
Well, it's good to know that he's healthy. And I mean, if he's going to be on the...
Taken to the seas.
Okay, so like, I'm on record saying I would never go on the Jericho cruise, but I have to admit, like, if there is one person on that cruise that feels like they should be there, that is Dalton Castle. Dalton Castle is definitely a person who belongs on a cruise ship.
I know nothing about cruise ships. I've never been on one. I was like, how do they do stuff on a ship? And then I looked up a map of the Jericho cruise and I'm like, oh my God, it's like a giant city.
Yeah. Well, I mean, cruise ships are huge. I've never been on a cruise, but I can tell you from what I know about them, I would not want to. There's a ton of cabins. So like you're on this ship with a lot of people because you can't afford to have a cruise ship unless you sell out most of your cabins. So you need to have a lot of them. Your cabins are tiny. You're operating in the same spaces as everybody else is. So like, it's all like, you know, when you're eating and everything, you're in the same space as everybody else. So you're there for days and days, lots of airborne transmitted illnesses, and throw on top of that, you're on the Jericho cruise. So just imagine being at a wrestling event for 4 days straight.
Well, our Elite Repeat co-host, Tempest, will be able to tell us what that's like when she's going.
That's true. And we have a couple of listeners who have written into us at various points who are also going on the Jericho cruise. No shade against them at all. I hope they have a blast, but it sounds like a horrible time to me.
I don't know. I will say I cannot wait for the Being the Elite episodes filmed on the cruise.
That I am excited.
Those are going to be a lot of fun.
That I am very excited for.
All right, and not to get away from Paul's email, because he has one final unrelated to Marty Scurll question for us.
Okay.
I'm a recent watcher of ROH, starting this year with Supercard of Honor. My friend and I are going to our first ROH show in December, and I'm trying to get her caught up on ROH. What do you recommend that she watches to be more familiar with the current product?
Oh.
I've had more time to think about this than you.
Yeah, so go for it.
I mean, ROH does a lot, obviously, with weekly television and Honor Club events, everything else. But the pay-per-views tend to mark sort of the big points in stories. And I feel like they often feature video packages summarizing TV events or things that happen on Honor Club, stuff like that. So I would probably just say Best in the World and Death Before Dishonor are like your two big starting points if you've already seen Supercard.
Yeah. And I would add to that it's like you really want to be completist, and if you really want to like know where this whole year has kind of come from, I would say maybe watch last year's Final Battle, because that gives you a lot of segues into what ROH's storylines start looking like come January and February.
There you go. And yeah, and I mean, that's those three shows is what, like 9 hours of viewing?
And then,
not that much. So if there's still time after that, definitely check out like all of November's television so you get a sense of really what's going on right now.
Yeah, I mean, just start watching the TV from now through November and you'll be basically caught up to wherever they are when you get to the show in December. I don't know what the show in December that Paul and his friend are going to.
I'd have to imagine it's Final Battle.
That's what I'm wondering.
I don't think there's anything else happening in December.
Yeah, I don't think if there's a TV taping or anything, because that's probably going to be the TV tapings that happened in Pittsburgh, segueing into whatever they have post-Final Battle. So, yeah, I just say pick up the television where it is now. These past two Las Vegas episodes have been really good. You can watch the ones that they filmed in where were they before this? Was it Fairfax before these ones?
Baltimore?
Was it like the...
I don't know.
Yeah. But the shows before that were pretty decent too. So start catching the TV on a regular, and in the meantime, catch up on those pay-per-views. They're uniformly pretty solid. If you've already seen Supercard, that's probably the longest one of all of them, so you can skip that and you'll be solid.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, or just go and read my old TV reports, and then you can skim right through and also get an educated fan's perspective on things.
Yeah. I mean, when did you, or just listen?
If you want to be really biased and just feel the same way I feel about everything.
That's true, except for Chris Sabin. You should root for, you should like Chris Sabin. Don't feel the way that Harley feels about Chris Sabin.
Our opening contest this week on TV was for the tag team titles. This was not supposed to be the opening contest, but Coast to Coast stormed the stage. They said they've been waiting this long. They're not waiting any longer. They called it the Briscoes. Briscoes were back in heel mode after that weird performance at Glory by Honor, where they were kind of baby faces against the Bouncers, and they all shared a beer and were all buddies. That was kind of weird. And then tonight they were back to just like calling the fans stupid and stuff.
Yeah, although, okay, so I get the sense that you'll probably agree with this, that like this seemed like a very quick turnaround for Coast to Coast, like come back, have a match or two, and then like get a title shot.
Not even a match or two, one match.
Okay. So yes.
Like that was my complaint. Yeah.
So they are undefeated, where they were undefeated going into this match. And part of that may have been the 2 months that they were out of the picture because, Ali had been in a car accident. So that kind of takes them out of like the consciousness of the ROH fans. Those of them who are not, you know, like dedicated to following ROH every week, like perhaps like we do. But we were tracking their progress, hoping that they'd come back, but not a lot of fans were really thinking about Coast to Coast when they were gone, which to me was very demonstrated in their reception when they came out. They kind of stormed out. It was like a really cool kind of moment for them to like, you know, build momentum going right into that match. But the crowd really wasn't feeling them. And as a result, the crowd response to the Briscoes was a much bigger pop. And that's weird when you consider the fact that the Briscoes are supposed to be the heels in this moment. Like they are, you know, as always, they are the heels. But like right now, they are really especially supposed to be the heels. We're supposed to be rooting for Coast to Coast. And that audience had to take some time to get behind them.
Yeah, Coast to Coast were out of action from May to October. Oh. So 5 months sitting on the sidelines. In the world of wrestling, I mean, a lot happens in 5 months. If you're a casual viewer of ROH, even if you're like a semi-regular viewer, you'd be forgiven to maybe not remember them, maybe not remember their big win over War Machine or some of their other big wins in the spring. And so I thought they come back, they have one match, which they win under shady circumstances because the illegal man pins the other illegal man in a tag match. And then all of a sudden they get a take title shot. And it's like, I thought they could have used some more warming up first. I thought they could have, I mean, but on the same hand, they could use that as an excuse, not as an excuse, but you know, they could use that as the story now as to why they lost.
Sure.
They only had one match to come back on. They were still getting warmed up. They're still feeling their way out. If they had got a take title match in May and Ali hadn't gotten injured, maybe they'd be champs. But coming back now, they come back, you know, you come back and you like, get thrown right into the deep end immediately against the best tag team in ROH history.
Yeah. And I mean, given the fact that they've been out of commission for so long, this match was not, and given the fact that they lost this match, they didn't look bad. This match actually did a fairly decent job of making both teams look like, you know, I mean, obviously the Briscoes look strong as the Briscoes look, but Coast to Coast didn't really suffer. Like, They held their own. They don't feel dominant for much of this match, but when they do get their strikes in, when they do get the upper hand, they tend to like do a lot with it, even in a short amount of time. So this match, if this match was meant to just, you know, kind of reestablish them as a, you know, a evolving, developing, like blossoming tag team in ROH, I feel like it did that.
Yeah, it went almost 18 minutes long.
Yeah.
Two commercial breaks. That's pretty long. And I definitely got that impression. It was supposed to be almost like a sequel to that match against War Machine, where they're in there against a team much more experienced, much more popular and well-known than them, and the odds are stacked against them. But LSG and Shaheem hung in there, and they wouldn't get put away quickly. They managed to hit their finishing move. They hit the coast-to-coast.
Yep.
They hit a 450 splash. They gave it everything they could, and yeah, they lost, but they put up a hell of a battle in the meantime.
Yeah. Yeah, they did not look weak in this defeat. Not at all.
But, yeah, I mean, at the same time, there is that part of me that went, but they did still get pinned at the end. What, did they have to? Couldn't we? There was the moment when they were all brawling at ringside, and Jay threw Ali into the guardrail, and at the moment I thought, oh, maybe we'll get like a double count out or something, you know, that way they don't win, but they don't lose, and it prolongs things and it keeps them protected. And then when the match was going on and on, I thought, you know what would be perfect here? A perfect finish for a match like this. Finish that ROH used to do all the time, but never does anymore, is a time limit draw.
Ah.
There was a time period where, like, for years and years, ROH used the time limits all the time. They had lots of time limit draws, and they would necessitate a rematch with, like, a longer time limit or no time limit or things like that. And it was a great way to get somebody over. You know, they didn't beat the Briscoes, but they hung in with them for 20 minutes. And the match came close to that. The match was up at like 17:45 or something when it ended.
Yeah.
Another 2.5 minutes could have done it. But ROH never does time limit draws anymore. They don't. You never even hear the time limit mentioned, I don't think.
Oh, no. I mean, rarely, unless it's something that's like very specific, like the Iron Man match.
Yeah, and that's a shame, because that's one of those little things which they had that really differentiated them from WWE, and it feels like they got rid of it because WWE got rid of it in the same way.
Yeah, and that's too bad, because I really wish that they would stick with that and take a cue from New Japan, because now New Japan doesn't do a ton of time limit draws, but when they do them, it's very pointed. There's like, it's very specific storyline-wise as to why they do them. And each match that they have does have a specified, very concretely defined time limit.
Yeah, like, I can't remember the last time I've heard even, even a warning that we're getting close to the time limit in an ROH match.
Yeah.
Like, Bobby Cruz coming on and saying, 2 minutes left, 1 minute left, or anything like that. We don't even get that. Nothing comes to mind.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's another thing in your pocketbook, another possible finish to, rather than a pinfall and submission, which is 90% of the matches.
Yeah. Or I mean, when it comes to the Briscoes, it could also just be like, you know, a DQ finish.
Yeah, that happens a fair amount.
Yeah. I was actually a little surprised that it didn't happen here. But ultimately, they kind of got like a fairly clean win. There were shenanigans, as there always are when it comes to the Briscoes. There was some like really fun psychology early on where they were like, you know, calling out LSG for trying to bring in Ali before, you know, trying to bring in his partner without tagging him in, and like, you know, teaming up and everything. And then, you know, turning around and doing that exact thing on the guys, like, you know, fun psychology from the Briscoes. But at the end of the day, like, you know, they hit the doomsday device and Mark got the pin. It's fairly, you know, fairly straight and narrow.
Yeah, which seems to be leading into whatever their story is heading towards final battle, because we had them backstage later pacing around too, which I guess we can talk about that in a second. But yeah, we had them backstage basically bragging about, well, you're not undefeated anymore, coast to coast, and who can stop us? Nobody can stop us.
Yeah.
Which is the big question mark now, because they have beaten every single tag team in ROH.
Yeah.
Most of them a couple times.
Yeah, so I mean, right now it's just like doing laps around the competition, right? Like, someone's going to stop them at this point, but like, it's just a matter of like, who have they already beaten that's going to come back and actually beat them?
Yeah. Oh, maybe it's Sabin and Kushida.
Yes. That would be very, very odd choice.
Sure. But yeah, that backstage, we had a little backstage with the two of them pacing around, mm-hmm. kind of same way that we saw Coast to Coast last week, in a different way, like not in front of the ROH wall, but just in a hallway somewhere.
Yeah.
Walking and talking.
They're really liking whatever it was about that hallway at that Las Vegas venue. They really liked it for setting up for promo setups.
Yeah, but we had that, and we also had a couple new things. We had the opening narrated video package for the credits, mm-hmm. where they talked about here's the three matches that are happening tonight and championships are on the line. And going into the commercial break, we had WWE does this a lot too. We had the shot of Martinez and Cobb in separate locker rooms, like warming up for their match.
Yeah, I'm not crazy, right? The style in this episode, they were throwing in flourishes here and there that like we don't typically see on ROH television.
Yeah, but I like it. It's really simple stuff. Like the Cobb and Martinez stuff was like 2 seconds of each. But A, it makes it feel like a bigger match, that we see the guys like getting hyped up, getting pumped for this match, because there's a lot on the line here. It's the television title. It's Cobb's debut. And, you know, it serves a purpose of like getting you excited for like, oh, yeah, that's tonight. That's coming up next. In a way that, you know, as good as the commentators are, it's that visual adds a different element from the commentators saying later tonight it's blah blah blah.
Yeah. Do you think though, in some sense, the like, you know, the pre opening credits, opening theme, video package, and the shots of Cobb and Martinez backstage, like do you feel like that was like to pump up, to like, you know, inflate audience expectations so that like it being a veritable squash match would be all that much more shocking?
Maybe to an extent, yeah. Like sell it like this is going to be a huge heavyweight main event. They're going to go 20 minutes. They're going to destroy each other, sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then it was one sided.
Yeah.
It was a destruction, but it was a one sided destruction.
Oh boy.
You want to just jump into that now? We'll save Sunil for later.
Yeah, let's talk about Jeff Cobb.
All right, this was his official singles debut. He also wrestled Glory by Honor, beating Eli Isom, but this was taped first, so it's technically the first.
Yes.
And, 1 minute and 27 seconds.
Yes. We have been pretty spoiled on this, right? Like, obviously, we had been barely spoiled about Jeff Cobb winning this title. We'd even been fairly spoiled on the fact that this was a squash match, but there was still a part of my brain that didn't really believe it was a total squash, you know, like, oh, maybe, it, you know, it's a 3 minute match, but like, you know, Jeff Cobb looks really dominant in it, but like, you know, Martinez, but this was a squash match. This was less than 2 minutes long. It was a minute and a half of Jeff Cobb, like no selling every single thing that Punishment brought to him and taking out Punishment in like three moves.
Yeah, I thought maybe like it would be like 5 to 6 minutes,
yeah,
or something. Not a minute and a half of just clothesline, no effect. Silencer, no effect. And then Tour of the Island.
Yeah.
Boom.
Yeah, clothesline, Tour of the Island, nice. Pin, done.
Yep. Punishment Martinez, we wish you the best in your future endeavors.
Yep. Maybe WWE will give you the like coven that you have long needed to really establish your generic Satanist gimmick.
Yeah, so I mean, Cobb looked great.
Cobb looked awesome.
And if Martinez was sticking around, there'd be a lot questionable about this, right?
Yeah. Oh boy.
But if you haven't heard, Punisher Martinez has already signed with NXT. He did the big Twitter group photo this week, him posing with Matt Riddle and Chelsea Green and Mia Yim and some others doing their clash shot. So he's already down in Florida, maybe getting brunch with Deonna Purrazzo. I don't know.
Yeah, getting tan, getting even more tan. Can Goth's tan? I guess he has to, yes.
Sure.
Sure.
He's Latino, so.
Yeah. No, I mean.
That's a different. He's not like a Robert Smith Goff.
Okay, fair enough.
You
you love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them, we'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Prichard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
Yeah, so in that sense, like, why not? Martinez has been built up as this monster for months, if not a couple years now, and having Cobb just destroy him in a minute and a half really puts over Cobb huge. It's very similar to how Cobb debuted in Lucha Underground, where it was just like, this guy is a monster, literally. Who can stop him? Who is possibly going to hang with him now? And we're left with that question.
Yeah. It's still kind of unclear what we are getting with Jeff Cobb as far as like what his character is in this, in ROH. Because, you know, we had this idea, you and I, that like he was kind of just like, you know, determined to win against anybody he went up against, you know, making no friends, making no alliances, showing no like consideration, you know, face, heel, doesn't matter. He's going to take you out. But then we saw that moment at, you know, Glory by Honor with him and Isom and Ryan Nova, and like him kind of paying respect to these, you know, young guys in the, that he had, you know, basically usurped by just jumping to the front of the class for the top prospect tournament. So it's hard to say yet, like what he's, you know, what they are going to do with him as far as his story in ROH.
Yeah. Cause this wasn't a feud. I mean,
no,
you know,
not really.
he showed up at the pay-per-view and accosted Martinez, and then he got a match immediately and beat him in a minute and a half. Yeah. And now he's the champ.
No, I mean, at this point, he's got a bigger feud with like Hiroki Goto from New Japan than he did with Punishment, because, you know, he's actually had a full match with Goto and is going to have another one. So,
yeah. So where he goes from here in terms of his face heel leanings, in terms of how he's presented, big question mark. I wouldn't be surprised if we see him and Shane Taylor sooner than later.
Yeah.
That seems like the most obvious match on the entire roster, I'd say, at this point.
Yeah. Gonna battle the strong boys, big strong boys.
Yeah. And after that, I don't know. I think he'd be great against people like Paige, against maybe even Marty Scurll as well, yeah, depending on how things shake down.
I'd like to see, and this is not said because I just really dig, you know, Jeff Cobb as a wrestler, like I obviously do, as everybody else, you know, obviously seems to as well. Like it's hard to argue with his abilities. He is a like dynamic performer. His Olympian roots like clearly show in the fact of like what he's able to do in ring. But it's not just the fact that I am a fan of Jeff Cobb's work. I would like to see Jeff Cobb hold onto the TV title for a while and kind of just be like dominant in his position, unshakable in his position, like slowly going through guys who challenge him for that title. And I'd like to see that like through Final Battle into the next year, and possibly him getting his like world title shot sometime like in the early 2019.
Yeah, I mean, spoiler alert on content from years ago, but in Lucha Underground, you know, it took a team of people and many months to finally hand him his first loss, sort of thing. And yeah, he's a different character here, you know, he's not...
Oh my God.
He's Jeff Cobb here, but his in ring, there's not a lot of difference. Yeah. The way he treated Martinez isn't all that different from the way Ricochet got thrown around 2 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, but just think about like, Punishment Martinez got beat crazy fast, crazy easily in this match. Go back to Death Before Dishonor in June and think about his match against Hangman, and like how unstoppable it seemed like Punishment was after that fairly brutal looking match. Like, botched finish or no, that he still looked really, really strong. And to send him out this way, with Cobb looking as dominant as he is, sends a message about just how hard it's going to be for anyone to take down Cobb.
Yeah, because we've had... So he's the fourth departure from ROH to NXT this year, following Deonna Purrazzo and Hanson and Rowe. Hanson and Rowe, their last match was against Coast to Coast. Long, good match that Coast to Coast picked up a win using like a roll-up or a schoolboy, I want to say. Mm-hmm. Prazo's last match was against Kelly Klein, her heated rival. Not super long, but like closer to like almost the 10-minute mark. Back and forth match that Klein ended up picking the win for. So yeah, you lose on the way out. That's fair.
Yeah,
that's wrestling 101.
That's what you got to do, especially if you've got a title. So like Punishment had the title, and he dropped it to Jeff Cobb through this match. Jeff Cobb ends up looking great. Punishment leaves for NXT. No harm, no foul. Everybody gets over.
Yeah, but my point is that Martinez got warped far harder and far faster than Peraza or War Machine did.
I mean, that is 100% true. And I don't know what else to make of that other than they are just all about like seizing this moment with Jeff Cobb. They have done this major signing with him. This is a huge deal. This is one of the best signings that they've done in I don't know how long.
Yeah, I said the best since Cody, or like the biggest since Cody.
Yeah, maybe they didn't even realize how big it was until after, they had some form of, because I don't know when things happened. Like at what point did they know that he was going to win Battle of Los Angeles? At what point did they know that he would become like PWG's world champion? At what point, he clearly had tons of credit behind his name before those particular wins, but you can't really say that those don't like even make his cachet all that much greater. So yeah, they've signed a really big fish here. So I think that they are trying to establish him like big on top as quickly as they possibly can. And this is how they've done it.
And so there we go, where one new star joins and is on the rise. Another is on his way out. This is the last we'll see of Punishment Martinez, I would have to guess.
Yeah.
I'm assuming he doesn't make any more appearances at the TV tapings. And, I'll still get to talk about him Wednesday nights on the Wednesday live cast, PWT Talks NXT. I don't know how long it's going to take for him to make it to NXT television, whether he'll get sort of the War Machine fast track where he's on TV in a month, he's in the crowd of the next TakeOver in November, or if it's going to be more of like a Donovan Dijak situation.
Yeah, what's Donovan Dijak's NXT name?
Donovan Dijakovic?
Dominic Dijakovic or something?
Something. I'm getting his first name wrong, aren't I? It's not. I keep saying Donovan. It's Dominic.
It's Dominic. Dominic Dijakovic.
He's been on TV. He's been off TV for so long, I've forgotten his name, and that's terrible, because I was a fan of his.
Yeah, I mean, he challenged he challenged Ciampa for the belt at the house show that I was at in September, and he came out, and I was like, Dominic Dijakovic. Wow, they really just took his name and way overcomplicated it.
Yeah, I don't know the story there. He's made one appearance on TV as Enhancement, and he's just doing the house show circuit now. I don't know if they're waiting for the right moment to introduce him, or if they're maybe just trying to figure out what his character is going to be.
Yeah.
I don't know the story with Dijak.
I don't want to turn this into like nonstop NXT talk, but like, I'm just kind of curious about Punishment getting signed to NXT and like being debuted in their most recent class. They've got a lot of big guys that they just brought in. Like, where's the room?
Yeah, that's something that I always say about NXT, is it always feels like there's so many top names and you don't know how there's going to be room for them all. But people kind of move and shuffle around too. There's somebody, the person, this is pure speculation on my part, I'm assuming Martinez is going to have a similar gimmick in NXT. Like, by nature, he's kind of a goth person. He's got the spooky eye makeup and stuff like that, right?
Don't they already have a gothy guy?
They have Aleister Black,
Formerly
known as Tommy End on the Indies. But Aleister is at that point in his NXT career where we're thinking he's probably going to be going up to Raw soon.
Ah.
Because he's been in NXT for a fair amount of time. He's held the top title. He's dropped the top title. I'm thinking by January, he'll be out of NXT. So that would provide a perfect opening for Punishment to come in.
Okay.
Honestly, with Punishment's character, Like, I think that's a better fit for WWE and NXT than it ever was for ROH.
Now, in the past, he has tagged with Matt Riddle, who is also in the most recent class of NXT. So do you think that you'll see Punishment Martinez tagging with Matt Riddle again in NXT?
No. That seems very... I'm surprised that they teamed together in the past because they don't seem to be the right... The bro and, like, the... dark goth guy who you would think doesn't have any friends.
Yes, but they totally did. And also, do you know who also has tagged with Matt Riddle on many occasions?
Jeff Cobb. There you go. It comes full circle.
Matt Riddle, leave NXT. Come to ROH.
Yeah, so I look forward to talking about Martinez more on the Wednesday livecast in the future. I think he'll do okay in NXT. He's a tall guy, but he can do the flips. He can do the journey into darkness and stuff like that, which the NXT crowd will respond to. I'd love to see him finally get that stable that I was clamoring for months in ROH. And WWE loves their, you know, look at Undertaker. Look at even The Brood and Gangrel and stuff. They love their, like, their goth babies. So
they're pretty good to their, like, to their... fake goths. So Godspeed Martinez, you're dead to me now. I do not watch WWE products.
So Martinez leaves ROH this year. He was 3-3 on television, but he was 11-4 on pay-per-views and Honor Club live events.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
for a record of 14-7, right at the 666, two wins for every one loss. There you go. Martinez left ROH with a 2018 televised record of 6-6.
Oh my gosh, this was perfect. Yeah, they had, like, that's it. That's done.
One more win or loss and it would have just ruined the whole thing.
6-6-6. Done. That's, there you go. Please someone confirm to us that was intentional. Please, oh please, oh please.
So Martinez is gone off to the world of NXT. Maybe he got some pointers or some advice on the way out from Tennille Dashwood, who arrived to us this year from NXT.
Indeed.
Tennille finally got some follow-up from her mystery attack at Death Before Dishonor. We also had the first appearance of a woman on ROH television in 4 weeks. So that's
not fighting, but there.
But there to push a storyline forward, and that's almost as good. Pretty much as good.
It's something. You guys are
a promo is as good as a match.
You're throwing us a bone.
So, and it's rare. I feel like it's rare that the women get long form mic time.
Yeah,
we hear from Kelly Klein sometimes, and we used to hear from Deonna.
Yeah.
But that's about it. This is Brandy on commentary.
This is the second one for Tennille this year. Okay. At least as far as, maybe she had one before the one in April, but in the Pittsburgh series of episodes, she had an in-ring promo where she talked about being disappointed in her performance in the Women of Honor tournament but, you know, wanting to strive ahead and chase that title because she found her home here in ROH and she was happy to be here and she was going to keep fighting for that title. So this, you know, was definitely a much more melancholy toned promo this one that we just got.
Yeah, it was a bummer that, like, she finally gets some mic time and it's just to say, hey, I'm going away and you won't see me.
Yeah. I'm doing really shitty and I'm sorry.
I did like that they blended the truth and the fiction. Mm-hmm. Like, she cited the attack backstage as the reason that her shoulder was injured, but she also owned up to legitimate things like her autoimmune disease and her skin conditions, stuff like that, which have also been factors on why she hasn't appeared maybe as much this year as people might have hoped, or hasn't got as much attention as you might have expected with all the fanfare on her coming in.
Yeah,
I liked all that. We don't know how long she's going to be out. I don't know how long shoulder surgery. I mean, it's she doesn't know, right? Doctors can give an estimate, but it's different for each person.
Well, was the surgery that Brandy got, was that on her shoulder as well?
Oh, yeah, Brandy broke her clavicle, mm-hmm. and maybe part of her shoulder was injured.
So, I mean, Brandy was out for several months, right? Like, she wrestled in April, and then I think she got injured, and I don't think she wrestled from May through, I don't know the last time she did wrestle.
She hasn't wrestled since returning.
Yeah, so.
She took like a bump, or she did like a, jumped off the top rope onto some people at ringside mm-hmm. during one of Cody's matches. But we haven't seen her wrestle a match.
Yeah, so it could be a couple of months for Tennille to, you know, make her way back into the ring full time.
Yeah, I'm guessing more than a couple months. I mean, Shaheem Ali was out for 5 months, like I said.
Yeah. So
I don't think we'll be seeing Tennille this winter.
What a shame. Women of Honor is really, it's been kind of a struggle this year post-tournament.
I mean, it's kind of fortuitous that Madison Rayne signed, so we have at least somebody to kind of help fill that gap mm-hmm. in Dashwood's absence.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
What do you make of the mystery attacker storyline? Tennille said she was attacked from behind. She didn't see who did it, so she's no help there.
Well, like you said, like this was a way of blending like kayfabe, like a storyline, in with like a, you know, actual like real world problems that Tennille is facing. And it's my favorite type of work, a work that like combines like elements of truth with something that is like, you know, just blatant, you know, a fictional storyline that like allows an extra reasoning to be like put on top of like the real reasons. My like one of my favorite like wrestling works. I like the attack storyline. I feel like it's a little obviously all signs pointed to Martinez when it was Alex Shelley getting, you know, attacked randomly backstage. I feel like this was a little too close in timeline. Like, you know, who's just running around like beating people up? Unless the attacker who attacked Shelley is also the attacker who attacked Tennille. But I doubt that that's going to be the case. I think it was set up pretty clearly that it was Martinez that did it to Shelley. And so I don't know. I'm interested to see who they have in mind as far as who will be this, you know, shadowy opponent to be revealed at a later date. But
and how do we reveal it? How do you reveal it? How do you find out? Short of the person coming out and straight up just saying it was me.
Okay. Like, I kind of hoped that we would get that reveal at the end of this promo with Tennille. Because, like, obviously they wouldn't have a fight about it because Tennille's in no shape to fight. But imagine being in that position where you're like standing and you see the person who, like this, you have this person in front of you who's saying what they've like, you know, basically proclaiming that they did this to you and you can't do anything about it. I think that would have been a really like powerful moment that would have, you know, sustained us for the several months that Tennille is going to be out.
So the fact that we didn't see that would lend me to believe that it wasn't someone like a Kelly Klein or Karen Q, because they would be happy to come out and rub it in Tennille's face that they did this.
Which
the attacker wants their anonymity.
Yeah.
They don't want anybody to know that it was them, which would lead you to believe that it's one of our heroes.
Yes, or it's somebody that, or they haven't figured out who it's going to be yet because they don't know who they're going to be able to use.
But that's the worst kind of stuff.
Yeah, and that's.
That's the problem. That's why so many wrestling mystery storylines fall flat, is because they start it without knowing who it's going to
be. Yeah, see, that's.
And then you find out it was Rikishi who ran over Stone Cold. And nobody is happy with that.
No, answer. Exactly. And that's what I'm a little afraid of here. No shade to anybody who's doing the booking for Women of Honor, but I'm just a little nervous that, like, the reason we didn't get that moment, which would have been a perfect moment, I'm worried that the reason we didn't get that is because there isn't an answer right now. Like, they need that person and they don't have her.
Well, I think we want to invest in some hero over the next couple of months. Watch somebody climb to the top of the ranks and be beloved by all the fans and everybody loves them. And then it's revealed that it was them who did it. And we are crushed.
I mean, who could be that at this point right now? Like, the only
Madison Rayne seems like the likeliest simply because she just arrived. Mm-hmm. And she's, you know, she just had a title shot against Sumi Sakai, lost. And then she got signed to a contract, and she's thinking, I just lost. I'm probably not going to get another title shot anytime soon. It's some good competition in this locker room. Maybe I need to find some space for myself.
Okay.
Thanks. Anybody who's seen her time in The Beautiful People knows that she has a mean streak.
Yeah. They haven't done a whole lot to establish that so far, but it is fairly early with Madison coming back into ROH and being signed. Like, so yeah, okay. I could see that. I still think, like, you know, obviously the Kelly Klein is like that person always ready to like beat someone down, especially like to attack them from behind or attack them randomly.
Yeah. I mean, NXT is doing a similar story to this right now. They had their top former champion, Aleister Black, found attacked in a parking lot. There was all sorts of video footage showing people around at the time, people at the food trucks nearby, walking around, doing promo practices, hanging out and just talking at picnic tables. And the general manager brought them in and interviewed them all to like inquire about who did this and who did what and what did you see and what's your excuse as to why it wasn't you, things like that, slowly over time. And eventually it was revealed that one woman did see everything, and she eventually told the guy who was attacked who it was, stuff like that. So I don't know if we're gonna get anything that elaborate with this story, but you'd hope that even with Kenio out on the sidelines, there's some way to further the mystery angle going forward, whether it's even just the women. We see the Women of Honor just pointing fingers at each other or speculating amongst each other.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind that so much, because I think it would at least go a long way in establishing the Women of Honor characters beyond like what we see of them in the ring, because we really don't see much of them outside of that. Like, we get a little bit of promo here and there, but not even that much. So it would be cool for them to use the limited resources that they have with Women of Honor right now, because their roster is fairly thin as far as people that they can use on a regular basis. It would be good for them to be able to, you know, utilize those women in creative ways that are not just whatever they're doing in ring.
Yeah, even if like every week on TV you got one minute backstage promo or whatever. Like this week it's Stella Gray saying, look, it wasn't me because da 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 da, and then we get a sense of her character. Or then it's Kelly Klein's turn. She says it wasn't me, because if it was me, I would have done it in front of the cameras for everybody to see. Stuff like that.
Yeah.
Use it. Yeah, it's a great opportunity to present, to give a better sense of the characters of all the women, and to get and NXT did a good job with this too, is they used that mystery storyline to set up a bunch of rivalries as well. There were some people who said, it wasn't me, it was obviously this guy. This guy's an a-hole and everybody hates him. And then the guy who got accused was mad that this guy was talking smack about him, and you got a feud out of that.
Yeah, I think that you could do it. You wouldn't have to be super heavy-handed about it. You could just have it be one of those reigning things where, like, one of these women has done this and you don't know who it is. I keep coming back to this, though. I'm a little worried that, like, they can't do this because they don't have an answer to that question yet. So they're going to, like, have that answer before they can build any other stories around it.
But even then, you could slowly, like, eliminate people that you know 100% aren't going to be it. Like, I would be, like, dumbfounded, totally out of my mind shocked if they were like, it was Sumi Sakai, because that just seems so not even a 1% part of
I was here. So worried that that's where they were to go with it, and I'm really hoping that that's not where they go with it.
Well, time will tell as we go move forward with the Women of Honor and the mystery storyline of who attacked Tennille Dashwood, who hates Australia.
Oh.
Anybody? Lots of people, I think.
Yeah.
Country founded by criminals.
Yeah. I don't know. over in New Japan, we're just getting overrun by, like, you know, New Zealanders, and they don't always get along with Australians that well. So who knows?
All right. Well, our next Honor Club event is Streaming for Vengeance, November 3rd. It's footage from the Jericho Cruise. We've got Y2 Jackson, or is the Bucks of Jericho. Facing off against Omega, Cody, and Marty Scurll. We have the Sea of Honor tournament. Then the next day, it is Survival of the Fittest, live from Columbus, Ohio. We got some more matches announced. It's Cody and the Young Bucks versus the Kingdom for the six-man titles.
Ooh.
So they will be getting their rematch.
Yeah. Finally.
It is SoCal Uncensored versus Jay Lethal and Jeff Cobb.
Nice.
In a tag match.
That's going to be a fun one.
That's going to be interesting for sure. Yeah. And then the Survival of the Fittest tournament. So we know it's going to be six first-round matches. And the six winners will face off in a six-way elimination match later on in the show. We know first match is Jonathan Gresham versus Hot Sauce.
Tracy Yay! Williams. This is going to be so good.
The second match is two Lucha Underground guys. The Darewolf, PJ Black, versus Luchasaurus, formerly known as Vibora. So I like that because we know that one of them is going to be in the main event. Regardless, and neither of them is currently under ROH contract, so that's fun. And then four more matches with 10 other names. And at first, I was very confused by this, but then I looked it up, and sometimes in years past, some of these qualifiers are three ways or four corner survival matches. So there you go. Those 10 names, though, the returning Dalton Castle, the villain Marty Scurll, Last Real Man Silas Young, Hangman Page, Flip Gordon, Beer City Bruiser, Andrew Everett, Colin Delaney, Stuka Jr., and Guerrero Maya Jr. So some CMLL stars, some guys from the Indies, some a former world champion in Dalton Castle, and then some up-and-comers in Beer City Bruiser and Flip Gordon. Bruiser is maybe the biggest surprise of the ROH names here.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised to see him on there too, but hey.
Yeah, maybe he's another name that might stand to benefit from Martinez leaving. There's less big men on the roster. It's kind of him and Cobb and Taylor.
Yeah, it would be kind of cool to see BCB get something beyond just tagging with Brian Malonis. Nothing against Brian Malonis, but we haven't seen Beer City Bruiser do much since. Didn't he win Top Prospect at some point? Or maybe that was Brian, but.
Malonis was in the Top Prospect. He didn't win, but he made a good showing. That was the year Josh Woods won.
I feel like Beer City Bruiser needs a moment, and maybe this is a way of getting him there.
Well, Survival of the Fittest is in a week and a half. I'm sure next week on the show we'll probably have the rest of the first round matches announced, and then we can maybe speculate on. We'll have to. Next week is our last podcast before Survival of the Fittest, so we will definitely have our predictions next week.
Yeah, and I'll be
on who wins the whole thing.
And I'll be gearing up for the TV taping, which is the very night before Survival of the Fittest. So we'll see who amongst these names might be appearing in the TV taping that's happening the day before.
Yeah, that's a whole opportunity to see some of these guys wrestling on ROH TV.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm really hoping that they make some interesting appearances. Should be an interesting group of four episodes.
And then the Global Wars Tour is November 7th to 11th. Matches starting to be announced slowly in Lewiston, Maine. It's LIJ, Naito, Evil, Sonata, and Bushi taking on Lethal, Gresham, Sabin, and Kushida in eight-man action.
Okay, so typically these tags with LIJ, they're okay. But I am very much looking forward to this particular one. LIJ versus Lethal, Gresham, Sabin, and Kushida. That's not just LIJ versus Bullet Club. This is good. I think this will be really good.
Yeah. And then the following night, that match is kind of broken up a little. It's a four-way tag match with Lethal and Gresham versus Sabin and Kushida versus the Young Bucks versus TK and Vinny from the Kingdom. November 9th in Buffalo, New York, it is another four-corner survival match. Gresham versus Flip versus Kushida versus Bushi. And then final night of the tour, November 11th, in person, I get to witness Jay Lethal versus Kenny King for the ROH World
Cup. Wow. So they're doing it on the Global Wars Tour, huh?
They're doing it on Canadian soil.
All right.
That's my main event. And next week on TV, speaking of a lot of these people, Next week on TV, it is Jay Lethal and Jonathan Gresham versus Kushida and Jushin Thunder Liger.
Both of whom are currently in the Super Junior Tag Tournament over in New Japan.
All right. Kind of a weird. And then also next week, Adam Page versus Scorpio Sky. Both of those are kind of, I don't know how those matches fit into any stories. So I'm intrigued to find out.
I mean, Lethal's got his little history with Kushida, right?
Yeah, but that's not really I don't know. That story seems kind of done once he beat Kushida again.
Look, I don't need much of a story as an excuse to want to see Gresham and Kushida in a ring together. Both of them are fantastic technical wrestlers with their own like ways of working into the submission holds and their own particular flourishes. And I'm very excited to see them wrestle each other once again.
All right. As long as it just doesn't lead. Like my fear looking at this match on paper is, oh, this sounds like a Bully Ray low blow show.
What? No.
Yeah, because him and Silas are like have bad blood with Lethal and Gresham, and it's four baby faces that everybody loves. What a perfect opportunity for Bully Ray's new squad of bullies to just ruin a match that everybody wants to see a clean finish.
Yeah, you're right.
But maybe I'm wrong.
I really hope you're wrong. That'd be such a bummer.
All right, and then Hangman Page versus Scorpio Sky. Don't know what to make of that one. I'm still wondering, like the Glory by Honor, Page and Skrull's attack on Helms still just like was so strange to me. It seems so despicable and so mean in a way that Page normally isn't. And I'm wondering if there's anything to that, if I'm just like mad.
I don't know. Maybe they just really like beating up Hurricane Helms.
It kind of looks fun.
I mean, can you...
He's wearing that mask and pretending to be a superhero in 2018.
I mean, I don't feel like I'm particularly heelish, and I kind of want to slap him.
Whatever. It happens.
I will.
Some people just have that kind of
face. We didn't talk about Hangman's promo in this episode, but I have to say, like, since we're mentioning his match against Sky next week, I did really enjoy his promo about loving Las Vegas, having escaped from kidnappers in Las Vegas. Just really great little bit of BTE kayfabe thrown into his promo.
Yeah, I forgot about that one. We haven't got there yet on Elite Repeat, our PW Torch VIP podcast where we watch.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fun story with Paige, but I really enjoyed that shout out in his promo.
All right. Well, that is next week. As always, if you want to reach us, you can find me on Twitter at Talking Honor.
You can find me on Twitter at ForkedPGH, ForkedPGH.
And you can send your emails to TalkingHonor@gmail.com. If you have comments, we'll read them on the show. If you have questions, we'll try our best to answer them. Let us know what you thought of Cody dropping the NWA title. Let us know what your animal hybrid is. Tell us what you think about Punishment Martinez's future prospects in NXT, who you think attacked Tennille Dashwood, and what your favorite David Wilcox song is.
He apparently has a very...
Is it Do the Bearcat?
He has a hit called Eye of the Hurricane, which sounds...
Oh, we'll play that next week in honor of Shane Helms.
Yeah, there you go. Everyone's favorite punching bag.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free addition to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post-shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including the review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan 4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan 4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.